Hi, everyone. New supply chain regulations are here, and we're going to show you what to make of them. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. The EU's new Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive regulation will massively impact how organizations will manage their supply chains going forward. And the Ethicast is running a special four-part series to give you what you need to know, not just to comply with this new regulation, but to use it as a blueprint for advancing your supply chain program to even higher levels of success. We have a terrific panel assembled for this discussion, featuring Patrick Nates, CEO of Vector International, a business consultancy around responsible business with a special focus on ESG, headquartered in Brussels, Belgium. Patrick is joined by Rob Bales, Director of Sustainable Supply Chains at Control Risks, a global specialty risk consultancy headquartered in London, England. And they are hosted by Ethisphere's own Executive Vice President and resident supply chain expert, Craig Moss. And now, without further delay, here's Craig, Rob, and Patrick.
Hi, welcome to this Ethicast, the first of a four-part series looking at supply chain due diligence and what it means to your organization. I'm here with my friends Patrick and Rob, and we're going to go over four parts in this series. The first one, we're going to look at the regulations and the impact of those regulations on your organization. Part two, we're going to go into some more detail on what you should be doing to measure the impact that you have and look at what you should be doing to try to meet these new regulations. In part three, we're going to look internally and look at the new dynamics that will take place internally in your organization around the new supply chain due diligence regulations. And then in part four, it's all about supply chain. So that means it has to impact what you're doing with your suppliers. So we'll be looking at what you could be doing to change the relationship you have with your suppliers in light of the new regulations. So with that, I'm going to kick it off and give you a little bit of background. The new European CSDDD, Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive, is largely based on the OECD due diligence guidelines and guidance. And there's so many laws now around the world that are all really based on the OECD. You have laws in Canada. In the US, we have the WAGER, Fair Labor Protection Act. You have laws in Japan, in Germany, the Supply Chain Due Diligence Act. I think I got that name right on that one. But the point is that there are more and more laws coming into place that require you to look at your supply chain, to look at the environmental impact and the social and human rights impact that you have in your supply chain. What we're going to talk about now is a little bit on the regulations. I'm going to turn it over to Rob first. And Rob, at Control Risks, you're dealing with a lot of large multinational companies that have very complex supply chains. What are you seeing as an impact that these new laws, and maybe in particular CSDDD, are having on the companies you deal with?
Yeah, thanks, Craig. Well, I think the first thing to say, and probably just for the benefit of listeners, is that just to describe the types of clients that we work with in the business functions. Control Risks Advantage is a third-party risk management solutions provider. So we work with many different types of businesses to provide screening solutions and due diligence solutions, and typically looking at risks such as sanctions and business integrity. And our function of the business, or the buyers that we typically work with in those businesses, is the compliance team or the compliance function. Now, what's happened with the emergence of supply chain due diligence regulation over the last 10 years, but particularly accelerated in the last 2 to 3, is that's really pushed a lot of what was typically a sort of niche domain for the sustainability or ESG function of the business much more on into the lap of the compliance function. And of course, there's a little bit of nuance to that. Depends on whether the businesses have an ESG and sustainability team in place. Quite often, the sort of mid-sized or smaller companies don't often have that. But that's one of the trends we're seeing. So what we're seeing is increasing number of questions now coming from our compliance buyers and those functions about what do we now do. And of course that presents challenges and problems because the subject matter around sustainability and ESG is quite complex. There is a wide variety of impacts across the social and the environmental, everything from carbon to biodiversity to human rights, which itself is a huge agenda and covers everything from child labor to forced labor to health and safety. And you're asking the compliance function of the business to have to now understand all of that and manage that risk. And that's not easy. So, I mean, from a kind of high level perspective, that's what we're seeing. And the CSDDD regulation in Europe is only going to amplify that in the next 2 years.
So, Patrick, over to you. What are you seeing in your client base? And in particular, I know that you're really active in Asia is one area. And then how do you think companies are reacting both to the regulation and then possible enforcement that may happen in the future?
Well, thanks very much, Craig. What happens in Asia? I think it is very much a mixed bag. If you think about, Asia, we have large customers that are, exposed to European companies, and therefore they kind of, have to comply somewhat with the laws in the countries that you've mentioned because of their customers. But you also have a lot of large companies that actually supply for local markets. And here, I think we're getting a very mixed bag of, okay, but what's going on? These companies have to do that. We don't, but suddenly, we get an inquiry and then we're not ready. So when I think about Asia, just in general, what we see is very different responses, a lot of confusion, a lot of misunderstanding, and a lot of miscommunication, actually. There's still a lot of confusion between, the whole auditing and social compliance of a factory versus real due diligence of a supply chain, looking at knowing what your supply chain looks like, knowing what they do, knowing what they are, knowing what the risk is up front, and then kind of managing that risk. So I think generally, and not only in Asia, I think there's quite, a lack of understanding of what it really all is. I think with that, I think there's a lot of, advice being given, especially by external advisors, that focuses then on the detailed differences between the different laws. And that, frankly, just makes the confusion even bigger because, as Rob said, ESG is vast, it's expanding, it's everywhere. There's a huge challenge of knowledge. And then we should not make it more complex. I think we need to make it simpler. And I think, we need to kind of step back in, kind of what are the principles that really kind of underlie all of these laws. And you said it, Craig, it largely is based on the OECD guidance, which of course, is also based on the Ruggie principles, right? I mean, when, John Ruggie went around the world and talked to many people, he kind of created this, initial precedent of a legal framework for due diligence and risk management on human rights, which is reflected. And I think we need to go back to principles and systemic approaches for companies rather than, very specific, this is how you comply with one law. Because again, suppliers supply multiple customers in different countries, but it's not only where your customer is based, it's also where your product is eventually going to end up, right? So you have to think of supply chains as in the country of manufacture, the country of transition, and then the country of use. And all of these laws on ESG are there. And so what is the best systemic way that an organization can take? And I think there's a lot more clarity needed, not only in Asia, but in also other parts of the world.
Yeah, I think you brought up a couple of good points there. One is in the work that I do, I see a lot of companies in response to the regulations are really segmenting their supply chain. And they do have an Asia-specific supply chain, and then they have a U.S. and Western Europe supply chain, in part driven by the regulations and also the, some of the political situations clearly are driving this like splitting of supply chains. I think that creates a lot of really challenging dynamics for people. Having two sets of conditions in a factory, what are they going to do? Produce one way for this market and one way for that market. It creates a lot of confusion. I think simplicity is the key here. And Rob, back to you. What are you thinking about in terms of when you look at how your clients are starting to look at the regulations? What are you hearing from them?
You know, to Patrick's point, it's definitely a mixed bag in terms of, you know, it depends on the company's existing ESG maturity level. Typically, we know that if a company is by virtue of the sector that they're in, let's say a consumer goods company who have historically received a lot of NGO or stakeholder or consumer scrutiny, will have a more advanced sort of supply chain ESG program, and therefore what we're seeing is a more mature ask that's coming from the compliance function. Where sometimes we're seeing this more now is that the compliance function has had a conversation with the ESG and sustainability team, and they are coming to Control Risk as a solutions provider with a relatively joined up ask to say, we would like to now add in ESG and sustainability as just another risk domain as part of our existing compliance or third-party risk management program. It doesn't necessarily mean that the existing compliance program that they have is the right thing to manage in ESG, a quite complex ESG ask, because of course the regulations around supply chain due diligence are much more nuanced and complex than those for, let's say, the sanction screening, whereas it's simply a binary yes, no, is this a compliant supplier or third party? So it is more complex. I mean, that's just one example that we're seeing, and that would be for a more mature company with a, you know, an ESG program that's already in place. But there's going to be a lot of companies, and we're seeing this as well, who simply now, well, who we know will fall within scope of the new CSDDD regulation, but they're not necessarily of the size or the maturity level that has required them to put some of the, these controls and processes around risk assessment and management and remediation in place. So they don't really have an awful lot. And so the ask that is coming to us is very different from the more mature. So it really depends on the company. And don't forget, here in Europe as well, we've had this patchwork of regulation over the last 10 years. You know, this goes back to, you know, the UK Modern Slavery Act, which is one of the first in Europe in 2016. And then over the years, we've seen, you know, things like the German Supply Chain Act last year. We saw the French Duty of Vigilance Law back in, was it, I think, 2019. We've had the Norwegian Transparency Act. Mm-hmm. Some variation across those, of course, those different regulations. But the point being is that the companies that have fallen within scope of those different regulations have already had to respond to something. So I think the other piece of this that we're seeing is companies saying, well, look, we've been responding to, for example, the Norwegian Transparency Act, but we now see that CSDDD is coming. So we need to check that what we've got in place already is sufficient to meet the new requirements that ultimately will bring some harmonization across the EU. And that really is what I think we're going to see a lot of as well.
And you brought up a really good point there. You know, at Ethisphere, I work with a lot of multinational companies and private equity firms and their portfolio companies on a host of different risk topics. So ESG topics, but also corruption, data privacy, cybersecurity, a host of different things. Some of the topics are pretty clear cut, like anti-corruption is a really, really simple concept to deal with. Are you bribing somebody or not? ESG is so complicated compared to that, because even within the E pillar or the S pillar, you have a huge number of different issues. So in the environmental pillar, it could be carbon reduction, it could be water consumption, energy consumption, pollution. There's a host of things. In the S pillar, to your point before, child labor, forced labor, you go down the list of things. It's a far, far more complex situation than many of the other risk topics that companies are used to dealing with in their supply chain. To complicate things, if you look at these supply chain due diligence regulations, it's not just about what I would call classic due diligence. A lot of people think of due diligence as doing an investigation before entering into a relationship to know who you're entering into a relationship with. These due diligence regulations go way beyond that. They are requiring you also to embed basically management systems in how you manage it. But then they go beyond that, and then you have to identify and assess the impact, but you have to remediate and monitor and then report. So it's this full cycle of almost like a continual improvement cycle that's required of a company that goes way beyond doing that initial background check and then signing a contract with somebody. I'll go to you first on this one, Patrick. What's your sense of when you look at these laws and like the breadth of them, how do you feel about that?
On the one hand, I'm quite excited that these laws are in place because it does create a level playing field. I also understand that there's an enormous amount of complexity in these laws. And as both of you said, you know, laws in different jurisdictions take quite a different approach to the supply chain due diligence. But at the same time, I think we need to go back to some basics. And, you know, our message to all of our clients is don't get lost in the forest of complexity, right? Let's step back for a second. And this is about managing your business. It is about understanding what is the core of your business and therefore what is important or material to you. So when we think about ESG, yes, ESG is complex, pervasive in every part of the business, but not everything is equal. So I think trying to understand that some things are more equal than others, not to quote a famous English writer, you know, I think the key is to really kind of understand what are the core elements for us as a business in the way that we do business, first and foremost, before you start on anything else. Once when you understand that, I think it is about having systemic approaches. And it's really important, again, both of you have said that as well, where some of your clients are taking very different and segmented approaches. Segmented approaches is a reactive way to respond to these different laws. And it is destructive in an organization to take these reactive approaches to, let's deal with this law, now let's deal with this law. There is so much in common, and it is about how do you manage risk in your business and in your supply chain? Do you know where you are? Do you know what you're doing there? Do you have information and data about these operations? You know, do you communicate regularly? Can you now make an informed decision, manage that decision? And because of the data that you have, can you now, you know, also explain that to other stakeholders, including the government and the regulatory authorities, but also others, your own customers, you know, your suppliers, your stakeholders, in order for you to build trust. And I'm going to work a little bit backwards because, you know, I'm a bit weird that way, but everything starts with trust. And in order for you to have trust, you need to have clear, relevant, accurate information. And in order for you to have that, you need to have the data. In order for you need to have the data, you need to understand where you are, what your risks are, and how you're managing them. And if you take that as a more systemic approach across an entire company, then I think success is yours. So let's try to be reflective rather than reactive to this tsunami of regulatory requirements out there.
I agree completely. And actually, part two of our series, we're going to go into a lot more depth on the risk assessment process and the ways that companies can start to deal with risk, because programs should be risk-based. And in across the board, whether you're dealing with corruption or cybersecurity or ESG topics, you have to have a risk-based program. Rob, anything that you want to wrap up and looking at when you look at the reach of these regulation and the requirement that it goes beyond doing the background checks to actually getting involved in monitoring, remediation, reporting. What's your take on this?
There's that thing about not wanting to overcomplexify something at the risk of, you know, let's not let perfect be the enemy of the good. And, you know, businesses need to start somewhere. But I absolutely agree that the danger with what is really and has been that kind of the domain of a sort of core niche ESG sustainability team. I know that's not completely accurate, but it's now falling into the lap of compliance. It starts to be looked at through a compliance lens, which is typically more on that sort of simplified due diligence, yes, no. And the risk is if we just start looking at this topic through that, the typical sort of systems and processes that the compliance function has been using, is that we're not going to meet the regulatory demand sufficiently. And I do see that as being something that is a risk. But my view, and maybe this is, you know, speaks to what we're talking about here with this kind of multiplicity of regulations, is not to try and satisfy the reactively one by one. It is to put in place a core system that's going to be able to answer all of those questions and that is going to serve multiple different functional needs within the business. Because if you can do that, then that's a system that bulletproofs you for the next 10 years. And we're going to see more of these regulations. We absolutely are. They're going to emerge, and they're going to start emerging in other countries beyond just primarily what North America, Europe, and Australia. So I think, you know, look at the core system that you need to put in place, and bring all of those different functional stakeholders around the table.
The other side to this is, I think that we're at a stage now where companies can actually embrace some of the environmental and social elements of their supply chain and use it as a force for good and actually gain a competitive advantage in the marketplace by showing that they have a more sustainable supply chain. If you look at some of the purchasing practices of the younger generations, you see that emerging more and more. The stats I see show that it's more prevalent in Europe than it is in the US, but we think it will continue. I think that will continue in that direction. So I think beyond the regulations are forcing companies to pay attention, but I think that leading companies are going to embrace this and understand that there is a business advantage to becoming really good at this.
I think we are talking about regulations, and I think regulations create a minimum platform for everybody, minimum requirements. But when we talk about enforcement per se, you know, it's not just the traditional enforcement of these regulations through administrative fines or reporting obligations, but it's much more. I think we're looking at these regulations driving, you know, access to market, where you kind of have to demonstrate that your product is worthy to access a market. I think we're getting more consumer enforcement, where consumers are now having access to data and kind of say, okay, now that you have to have that due diligence and the reporting directive that kind of comes with that, let's see. And, you know, that helps me make some consumer choices. These regulations drive, you know, kind of more data and data transparency, which then also, frankly, you know, kind of is used by different right holders, you know, either through pressure or through decision. And you mentioned some of the investor communities that you're working with. Clearly, they are using that kind of evolution, you know, for a type of enforcement. It's not a regulatory enforcement, but it's an enforcement through kind of, vote with the money that you have. And I think we're going to see that from a number of sections in society, from consumers to investors. This is kind of a tipping point where the evolution of due diligence is going to trigger opportunities rather than hurdles for those that embrace it in a systemic way.
I think it's that thing between spirit of the law and the letter of the law, right? And I think the, you know, leading companies will be the spirit. I think we cannot avoid the fact that there will be many, many companies who just bide by the letter. But that's the point of a regulation. It brings up the baseline, sort of the lowest common denominator. And that is also important too. So I think it's probably going to be a bit of both.
That's great. Well, thanks everybody for joining session one in our series. The next one is going to be looking at how do you measure and prioritize risk. We talked about that a little bit today, but we're going to go into much more detail in the next session. Thanks very much. See you soon.
To learn more about how Vectra International can help you improve your organization's ESG performance, enhance your quality assurance processes, and transform your business, please visit VectraInternational.com. That's VECTRA-INTL.com. And to learn more about how control risks can help you advance your ethics, compliance, and governance programs, as well as a host of additional services, please visit controlrisks.com. And finally, for a host of helpful resources to help you better understand and manage your supply chain due diligence process, please visit the Ethisphere Resource Center at ethisphere.com/resources. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business.